This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Farrah.com. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Everett?
So Moms Demand Action held a rally over the weekend, and they were there to speak out against guns, which is what they do. This is a gun control group, and, you know, more power to them. But the problem is they're promoting red flag laws, not because it actually does anything to prevent gun violence, but it's just an easy way to take away their rights from people, rights that they don't support.
You are pledging to do everything in your power to end gun violence. Tell me, enough.
That didn't even sound all that enthusiastic. Not a lot of people are showing up to these things. Despite in Washington State, they definitely have public opinion on their side. Now, Erin Senge is a member of Moms Demand Action, and she told Como TV that she knows personally someone who had to deal with gun violence, and it impacted her and her family.
My neighbor, a young man on my street, was able to purchase a firearm, a semi-automatic rifle, and shot and killed his ex-girlfriend and two other friends and wounded one other.
Now, there's no one out there who's going to say that that is not a tragedy. There's no one out there who will listen to something like that and say, oh, well, you know, stuff happens. No, we look at that, and of course we want to mitigate everything we can to make sure that doesn't happen again. But there's no indication what law, let alone a red flag law, but what law would have prevented that kid from getting a gun. There's no indication whatsoever. Mitch Stevens, a student at Western Washington University, he notes that his grandfather committed suicide thanks to his access to a gun.
I didn't think about gun by suicide by gun as a form of gun violence. He used to live in Nevada, and if there were red flag laws in Nevada at least a year beforehand, there wouldn't have been a way for him to be able to acquire a weapon.
There would have been no way for him to acquire a weapon, period? How so? What was it about his life, about his experiences, about what you noticed would have prevented him, thanks to a red flag law, from getting access to a gun? And let's say that you were able to do that. Did he still have access to the top of a building to jump or medications to take? Because when I hear a story like this, again, incredibly tragic, but we're not having the right conversation. Instead of talking about the reason why he killed himself, we're talking about the actual weapon that he used to take his own life. Why aren't we talking about the suicide? Push aside for a moment the access to a gun. Why aren't we talking about the suicide and the mental illness there? People who want to commit suicide, they're going to find a way to commit suicide. And yes, when they have an easier way than not, they might go ahead and move forward. But why are we not having the conversation about suicide? My friend Jake Steinberg, July 23rd, 2003, he, without access to a gun, he went to work in New York. He was at a talent agency. He was interning there. It was over the summer. And he went to the top floor, I believe it was the 10th floor of the building. He took a chair, he broke the window, and he jumped. He committed suicide. He didn't need access to a gun to do that. He was intent on doing that. Afterwards, we didn't talk about the dangers of having access to tall buildings. We had the conversation about, did we see any warning signs? And if we did, what could we do? It was at that point that I got more involved in the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. It was at that point where I said, okay, this is something that we need to take incredibly seriously, because I miss Jake. He was an amazing friend. He was a very good friend of mine in college. We should be having the conversation about suicide, and yet we're not. We're not because it doesn't fit the political agendas of the people who want us talking about guns. It is so much easier to talk about taking away guns than it is about treating someone who's dealing with depression or anxiety, or whatever it is that they're dealing with that is leading them to even think about suicide. Boyd Neeland was there. He's actually with a group called Citizens for Right to Keep and Bear Arms, and he says more gun control isn't the way to go.
Almost all of these horrible tragedies take place inside of those gun-free zone areas. We all want the same thing. We want criminal violence to be stopped. We just have a very different approach to how to go there.
So there's a story over the weekend that I saw being used to push for more gun control laws. And really, it was being used to scare people. What if is a question that is posed with this story that was over the weekend. It came out by the Tribune Media Company. And the title of it was, there could have been three more mass shootings if these men weren't stopped. And in the story, they say authorities this weekend announced they had foiled three potential mass shootings after arresting three men in different states who expressed interest in or threatened to carry them out. And they say, well, what if they actually got access to those guns? What if they were able, with access to those guns, to commit those mass shootings that they had intended to commit? With respect, I think that's the wrong way to respond to this story. I think we say because of the laws that we have in place and because of one single simple piece of advice, these potential tragedies were thwarted. Every single one of the cases here came down to see something, say something. People saw suspicious behavior, suspicious text messages, suspicious postings on social media, and they said something. And as a result of saying something, these potential tragedies were stopped. In fact, in one of the cases, a 25-year-old in Dayton Beach, Florida, he sent a bunch of text messages to his ex-girlfriend. And some of these text messages, according to the news release from the sheriff's office, said that he wanted to open fire on a large crowd. He said, quote, a good 100 kills would be nice. He also said he had already had a location in mind, according to the sheriff's office. This person decided to say something, and as a result of saying something, they stopped this person from potentially committing a mass shooting. That's the way we're supposed to move on with this sort of stuff. When we see something suspicious, we're supposed to say something. We didn't need any new gun control laws to thwart these three potential mass shootings. We didn't need a single new law, and we stopped three mass shootings from taking place in this country. Doesn't this show you how the reaction to these instances does not necessarily mean more laws? Follow the laws we currently have. Use some basic common sense. Commit to saying something if you see something suspicious, and imagine what would happen as a result. Imagine what would have happened in Florida with Stoneman Douglas if people were able to do their jobs and actually go after the shooter who showed so many warning signs over and over and over again. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
So last week at the rally in New Hampshire, the president at one point claimed that there was voter fraud that kept him from winning the popular vote, and he was specifically talking about voting rights in New Hampshire, that there was some shenanigans going on behind the scenes, and as a result of that, he lost New Hampshire when otherwise he believes he would have won. FEC Chair Ellen Weintraub, former FEC chair, was on with CNN this morning and said there's no proof of voter fraud, and claiming so is dangerous.
Facts matter, and people of America need to be able to believe what their leaders tell them. It is damaging to our democracy to spread information that, as you yourself just described, is baseless. There is no evidence of rampant voter fraud in 2016 or really in any previous election. People have studied this. Academics have studied this. Lawyers have studied this. The government has studied this. Democrats have studied this. Republicans have studied this. And no one can find any evidence of rampant voter fraud, either historically or particularly in the 2016 election.
She is 100% correct. Everything just said is correct. Now, you got to focus on rampant, because that's really what this is about. You can certainly find cases of voter fraud happening from time to time. Sometimes they get away with it. Sometimes they don't. In fact, the vast majority of cases, they don't. But it is kind of hard to prove something happened when there's no proof that something happened. But she's talking about rampant. She's 100% right. Here's the difference in how I want to talk about this versus the way CNN does. They focus singularly on this, and they use it to go after the president over and over and over again because they've got an agenda that is anti-Trump. They also ignore similarly dangerous and stupid comments coming from people like Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams, who was running for governor in Georgia, she lost. The winner in that case won fair and square. She's going out there pretending that there was some kind of voter suppression. And oh my gosh, not only did she lose because of voter suppression in Georgia, but across the country, voter suppression, we're disenfranchising people left and right, and it's usually people of color that we're going after. They do that over and over and over again. And you never hear anything coming from the media to push back and say, okay, I know you're making these claims, but you don't have any evidence of that. In fact, we've studied. Republicans have studied it. Democrats have studied it. Independents have studied it. Our intern even looked it up on Google. Couldn't find any instances beyond conjecture or some crazy blog somewhere. The left's version of InfoWars. Think progress. Other than them, we're not actually seeing anything that's rampant. No one pushes the language of how dangerous it is that Stacey Abrams is saying it. They like Stacey Abrams. They wanted her to win in Georgia. They were rooting for her. They were trying to put her in a position of power. And that's why they don't cover the same exact story with basically the exact same language. They don't treat it the same. They don't talk about it the same. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Send me your text messages. Let me know what you have to say. We had a lot of fun over the weekend on our Facebook page, so don't miss out. Give me a like. Give me a follow. Facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show. Facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show, or just fire up the Facebook app and search for Jason Rantz Show. The full thing, or you're not finding the right place. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
My next guest says the media outlets and activists out there are vastly overstating the crisis of violent white supremacy, that the surge in violence, he says, is a myth. Eddie Scarry makes the point in his brand new column in the Washington Examiner at WashingtonExaminer.com. He's also got a brand new book coming out, Privileged Victims, How America's Culture Fascists Hijacked the Country and Elevated Its Worst People. Eddie joins me now. Eddie, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, Jason. Happy to be here.
So let's talk about, in your view, what is dishonest about the stories being presented around violent white supremacy? Because we do know it exists.
Well, this isn't in my view. This is simply in the studies that have been cited round and round by the national media. And, of course, the way they're presented in the media is dishonest, I would say. But even the studies themselves oftentimes present them in a way that is not the accurate truth. For example, there's usually the same two studies over and over again over the last 2 years that are cited. One of them was done by the Anti-Defamation League that looks at quote-unquote extremist violence in America from 2018, I believe. And then another one that was done by the Government Accountability Office, and that I think looked at the years between 2011 and 2017, I think, to look at what the total violence, domestic, extremist, terrorist violence, whatever you want to call it. And usually when it comes to the question of white supremacy, I mean, well, what do you think of when you hear about white supremacy violence? You would think about KKK running the streets. You would think about these people with Nazis stenciled into their forehead running around committing violence against blacks or Latinos, something you might have seen like in El Paso. And yet that's, you look at their own examples, within the studies, the examples they cite, they tend to be a person who, I would say probably 99% of the cases are actually mentally, you know, there's something wrong with them mentally, but also just that their own victims tend to be white. Sometimes it's even their own family members. In one case, it was a couple. It was a married couple. The guy had been involved in, I guess, some white supremacy gang in a prison, and him and his wife killed their 6-month-old baby and put him in a freezer. That was listed under white supremacy because he was
He just happened to be a white supremacist who also happened to commit a crime, but not necessarily driven by his white supremacy.
Right, and one more I'll tell you. This is another one I looked at just recently. I occasionally go back and look through the studies just to pick out a different new example. The one I picked out last week was it was another married couple, and they had picked a guy who was a 69-year-old white guy who his home was off the highway. They wanted to basically do this property inheritance scheme where they were going to kill him and then inherit his property in some way. I don't know what law they were looking at, but they thought they could actually kill him and inherit all his belongings and his property. It had nothing to do with his race, you know, racial animus, racial views, but they found Nazi memorabilia in the couple's home, so that's white supremacy related.
So, I mean, in a lot of ways, you're making a similar claim to, I think, what Tucker Carlson was trying to say on Fox News a couple weeks ago that ended up earning him calls for boycotts, which is, you're not saying white supremacy doesn't exist. You're not saying white supremacy violence doesn't exist. You're saying that the way it's being portrayed in the media by some activists is just vastly overstating it, in that we don't have a whole bunch of cities being overrun by Nazis who are wandering through the streets hurting people.
Well, right. I mean, I don't know the extent. I mean, all we know about white supremacy, as far as I have seen, I don't know that there are numbers of how many people self-identify as a white supremacist. I don't know that number. I don't know there are studies on that. But when we keep talking about white supremacy and there's this rage sweeping through the country of white supremacy violence, right-wing violence, and 90% of it, according to the ADL, was white supremacy related, And that number, by the way, I think it totaled to 50 murders in 2018. So you're looking at 50 murders in a country of 320 million people. Do the math on that. I don't think there's this wave of right-wing extremist violence. But no, of course, I mean, I'm sure you can pick out one or two. I mean, I would even say if you want to call the El Paso white supremacy-related violence, fine, go ahead. But that's not part of some larger trend or pattern that we've seen over the last 3 years, and yet these two studies are the ones that keep being cited over the last 2 years. And again, it's an infinitesimally small number of people, and then within that number of people, you even look at the examples, and over again, you find out, okay, well, this was not a murder that was motivated by racism or racial animus. It was a white person on white person crime, which, by the way, it just tends to be what violent crime tends to be. You look at the FBI statistics, mm-hmm. It's white people, if they're going to kill someone, it tends to be another white person. Black people, the same thing. We're not seeing some new, out of the normal rash of white supremacy that the media keeps pushing.
So why do you think they're pushing that idea?
The answer is obvious. The answer is obvious. This goes back to 2015. They've been saying this since 2015 about Trump inciting violence, Trump instigating, and we're just on the verge of any day now. We're going to see some outbreak of violence from Trump supporters and people who are parroting what Trump says. They've been saying that all along, and yet we've never seen it. We haven't seen it even one time. The one time I think that they're trying to say now is the El Paso mass shooting, in which case the guy even said this has to do with views that predate Trump, predate his election, predate his campaign. Another one that I wrote about this a few weeks ago was the guy who they found him in Maryland, and he had like stockpiles of weapons, and he'd been writing emails on the internet that were about his views about white, you know, supremacy, and we need a white country. But he also talked about being a biologist, and he wanted to kill everybody, and he wanted to have his own city. Those aren't the views of a Trump supporter motivated by racism. That's just a crazy person. The name Trump in his own emails that were passed around and that the FBI had listed, they didn't say anything about Trump. You had one mention of Trump, and he had said, well, if Trump's impeached, that's going to be incitement for widespread violence, and then we'll carry out all my views, all the fantasies I have. But otherwise, he never said anything about Trump. So, again, the whole point of this new narrative about white supremacy is just to tie it back to Trump. It's meant to be political. It's meant to be a political attack.
Well, the column is up right now at WashingtonExaminer.com. We've been talking with Eddie Scarry. By the way, book comes out in February if you want to pre-order it, as I did today. It's called Privileged Victims, How America's Culture Fascists Hijacked the Country and Elevated Its Worst People. It sounds both like a maddening read, but an enjoyable one.
You're going to like it. And yes, it comes out February. And again, it is available on Amazon and also Barnes & Noble now for pre-order.
Absolutely. Check it out. Eddie Scarry, thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Foodie edition.
So it's all come down to this. Producer Tom has been going from burger joint to burger joint all across the region trying to find the absolute best. And now we've got a bracket up as well as a poll up so that you guys can vote on what the best burger is. If you text the keyword tweet to 1-800-465-8770, we'll send you to the KTH Twitter feed. And there, Producer Tom, folks can vote and we'll narrow it down to the best of the best.
Yeah, and early polling results have come in, and it's showing, you know, some of it as expected, some of it at least in the play-in round that we are right now. We'll continue it into the round one and two tomorrow and Wednesday. But in the play-in round, we kind of see Loretta's Northwesterner jumping ahead of Coastline Burgers, which is not surprising, but Coastline had a pretty big lead early on. The big surprise is in the UW and South Lake Union bracket, where we see Cali Burger just getting destroyed by Burger Master, which blows my mind.
It blows my mind, too, mostly because I like them both, but I voted for Cali Burger. Between those two, I think Cali Burger has the edge, and yet it's down 75% to 25%. Great State Burger is trailing 60-40 to Burger Bar. Rain City Burgers and Unita Burger in what is probably the biggest surprise is 50-50 right now. So we're going to be rolling out these polls over the course of the next couple days until we get the best of the best, which we'll put out there on Friday at 4:15. We'll tell you what the best burger is not only according to Tom, but also according to you guys. All you have to do is text the keyword tweet to 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword tweet to 1-800-465-8770 or go to twitter.com/770KTTH. Make sure you're voting on all of these, and then we'll have all the results on Friday. I can't wait.
You're trying to hide your excitement?
I'm so excited.
I see you right through it.
This is totally legitimate. I cannot wait.
I think you're very excited, and you're trying to pretend like you're not, because this is fun. This is the most fun that Jason Rant Show is going to have in 2019.
No, something tells me on Friday is the most fun I'm going to have in 2019.
Could be.
Just
could
saying. Be. Text tweet.
Bellingham, Bellevue, Shoreline, Tacoma.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rant Show.
Olympia, Everett, Mercer Island.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. It means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller Smiles by Design. The concept is very, very simple to understand. The media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle. They end up ignoring you and the communities you live in, so we do the opposite. We focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most, and we completely ignore the city of Seattle. And we start in Issaquah, where a Washington State ferry worker was bitten by a bat over the weekend. The ferry was traveling along the Vashon-Fauntleroy-Southworth route when a female worker spotted something lying on the card deck, and she decided to pick it up. And it turns out that it was a live bat that was kind of just, I guess, chilling, maybe taking a little bit of a nap on the car deck, and it ends up biting the woman. And now she's either a mutant superhero or she's going to start the zombie apocalypse. Not quite sure. They're doing the testing now to make sure everything is well, and they're testing the bat. My assumption, though, is zombie apocalypse.
No in between.
Right? It's either or.
Mm-hmm.
So she's either going to be a superhero of some kind, and I don't know what her superpower will be. It could be flying. It could be just she grows fangs and starts biting people. And But that's also, weirdly, also what happens if it was a zombie apocalypse. So at the end of the day, we're all going to die as a result.
Well,
I've watched movies.
Yeah, what happened to Bruce Wayne? He didn't get any power.
He's not a superhero. He's just a guy who does superhero stuff, but he's not a superhero.
Oh.
I mean, he's considered a superhero, but he's not.
By the way, I got through six times. How many did you?
What?
I got through six times. That's how many times I was able to say it. Bitten by a bat.
Bitten by a bat. Bitten by a bat. Bitten by a bat. Bitten by a bat. Bitten by a bat. Bitten by a bat. Bitten by a bat.
Well, you got to
keep doing it. Like even faster
closer,
than that
yes,
incredibly
exactly.
Oh, shut up. Ian Sterling, Washington State Ferries. He tells Q13 that the woman was treated and the bat was captured.
She stuck it out until we could get relief to relieve her, so we were able to continue to sail.
Okay, she's not a hero. I mean, good. I'm glad she did that. And people do tend to use, we got a paper cut, I have to go home. So I suppose in that regard, I'll say thank you for not causing a whole bunch of delays for the people there. But it's not like the bat ate you. It's just a little bite.
Someone's got to go through it.
I mean, does she still have her hands? Her fingers, her toes, she's fine.
The bat was captured in a box by other ferry workers and then turned over to animal control alive, is how I understand it. And then our person was off the boat and sought medical attention.
Okay, and there were no sailing delays, as he said. Here he is talking with Cairo Radio, our sister station. This apparently is incredibly rare.
This is the first instance of a bat aboard a state ferry that I've ever heard of in the 50 years of the agency or even predating Washington State Ferry. So this is a rare occurrence.
Okay. It's rare. Zombie apocalypses don't just happen overnight.
No, but they happen within 10 seconds.
I saw and read the passage. I read the entire book, which is like encyclopedic. It's huge. It's the size of a dictionary. I read that book. It's fantastic. Justin Cronin. It starts out exactly like this. A bat bites an individual, and then it spreads this apocalypse virus. And then I saw the TV show that was based mostly on the book. And the same thing happened. So we're all going to die.
Ferry worker in Issaquah, same thing?
It was in Colorado. I can't remember where in Colorado. Maybe
so it's
Colorado
not the
Springs.
Same thing.
Well, the details are the same of just a bat biting someone.
I guess people just don't matter to you.
Well,
individuals
not if
don't
they're
going to
start the zombie bat apocalypse. Meanwhile, Como TV is reporting a woman was run over by her child as she was putting things away in the trunk of her car outside of Pedrovsky Park. It happened yesterday. One of the woman's kids got behind the wheel, put the car in reverse and backed over the mom. It happened, according to Renton Fire, around 2 p.m. yesterday. The woman was taken to Harborview Medical Center, mostly as a precaution. They say she sustained minor injuries and that it's not that big of a deal. How old was the kid? Because here's a question I have. Assuming the kid was young, how did the kid reach the pedals?
It says here is 23 years old.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought. I think this was intentional. Isn't that possible? I'm not saying I would do the same thing if my mom was behind a car putting stuff in the trunk, but I might if I didn't have a good relationship with her. Is it possible that these are the early signs of like a six-year-old who's a sociopath?
Wasn't there...
Just throwing that out there.
Wasn't there an old radio host you'd probably, like, without hesitation do that to?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, to be fair, I would probably do that to my mother now.
Oh.
Because we have that relationship.
I thought you were debating doing it.
No, I would debate it on air so people don't think I'm a bad person, but you know me.
Right.
I mean, I'm a bad person.
I can't tell you how many people you've run over who work here.
Yeah, well, they
that's why they don't give you the station car anymore.
That is also part. And yes, I was declared uninsurable, according to the car insurance. Geico was all like, nope, can't do it anymore. Too many accidents of, quote unquote, accidentally running over interns and show staff members. That's why Dylan the intern isn't here anymore. I'm sorry. I already written the apology letter. It's already out there.
He was a good kid.
The evidence was all right. I mean, if he didn't bring me the coffee when I asked him to, maybe he wouldn't have gotten run over by the car by accident. I mean, the Edmonds School District just agreed to a plan that will allow for layoffs of staff members and teachers. In some classes, they're going to actually increase the sizes, and they're going to be tightening some spending, all to make up for the nearly $18 million hole that they needed to fill. Mostly thanks in large part to teachers that demanded and negotiated successfully a huge raise. The reason why they're in this position right now is the Edmonds teachers there, under the Washington Education Association, the Educators Association, the union, they negotiated between a 13 and 19% salary bump that the district could not afford. They said they could not afford it. They went ahead and did it anyway. As a result, then, they found themselves out about $17.7 million. And then they said, okay, well, we're going to have to fire some people. We're going to have to lay off some people. We're going to have to not fill certain positions if we're going to make this work for our budget, because we're not getting the amount of money that we needed to get in order to make up for this. Then, of course, the teachers got all upset pretending that this is happening as if they didn't expect it when they did. And now it's a reality. They voted 4-0 to push forward with this plan. The board expects to save $5.7 million through layoffs and larger class sizes. There will be an average of 2 to 3 more students in classes in grades 4 through 12, according to the Everett Herald. They'll be tightening belts in other cases, in other situations as well. This is what happens when you allow teachers' unions to demand more money, to get more money, than they actually have. They do not work every single day of the year. They get 3 months off every single year. If you need more money, if you cannot afford to work, working as few hours and months that you work, then you get a second job. You can get seasonal work. You're not better than anybody else. If you cannot make the pay work for you, given the hours, given the resources that you had access to, that's kind of on you. We can't simply use this and say all teachers are heroes and use that as a way to justify spending money that they do not have. If you've got the money to spend, if you've got hundreds of millions of dollars all across the state that right now you can put into salaries, cool. Put it into the salaries of the teachers who are deserving of higher salaries. I'm not going to get in the way of people getting what they deserve. But I am going to get in the way of making these decisions because it's politically expedient to, because you're going to gain some points from the community to back the teachers when you know you can't afford it. How many situations do we have right now in the state of Washington where, because we gave more money, they had to lay off teachers? It happened in Tacoma, Spokane, Puyallup, Edmonds. How many more cases does this have to happen before we say, you know what, as much as I'd love to give you a 13% increase in pay, we just don't have it in the budget right now. It's not that we're dismissing the hard work that you do. God bless you working 5 hours a day and then, you know, taking the afternoons off and all of summer's off. God bless you for all of the stuff that you deal with, especially when you're not really engaged in the classroom and you're just sending kids to the principal's office when they act out because you don't want to actually handle them in the class. But pushing all that aside, we would love to give you more money. Fortunately, we can't. We don't want to lose you, but the fact of the matter is, if we did, we're going to have to then pass along some of those classrooms, distribute them out to other teachers, and maybe at that point we're going to get to save the $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 that we don't have to pay you, and we can distribute it that way. At some point, you either need a smaller staff or a bigger budget. If you do not have the money in the budget, this is what happens. End of story. Finally, also in Edmonds, a woman is under arrest after police say she tried to lure a four-year-old away from a family event. It happened on Sunday evening, so last night. They say the family was at the Edmonds Yacht Club, and the child was playing on the patio. The parents first saw the woman kind of acting suspicious. Here's Sergeant Josh McClure of Edmonds Police talking with our sister station, Cairo Radio.
It actually kind of evolved over about an hour period where the female suspect had been seen earlier taking photos and maybe even some concern at that moment about taking photos of the kids or the child in particular that was involved in the later incident.
Yeah, so that's kind of weird, taking photos of a kid that isn't yours. That's awfully suspicious. Then about an hour later,
the same female was seen talking to this four-year-old. Hey, do you want to come see my kitty cat? And then had some further conversation with her. Something was said to the child that caused the child to get upset. This caused attention from some older children and some adults.
She's all like, I hate cats. In fact, I've murdered about a dozen and a half of them out in Thurston County.
We got her.
I'm really a dog person, and so you're kind of creeping me out.
So then people kind of went inside to get some other adults, and when they came back out to confront the female, she got into a car and left the area. Fortunately, 911 had already been called, and officers arriving to the area came to the initial scene, but then also went to an area check and found the suspect vehicle not far away.
Okay. Let's just take this as an opportunity, again, because I feel like when I was a kid, this was an example that was used all the time, which is don't talk to strangers, don't go into their vans, don't take candy from them. And that was something that we used to really hit home. And I feel like we don't have that conversation as much anymore. And I'm not entirely sure I know why. Maybe we've just changed the conversation to not doing weird things online and like being careful in that regard. But we now are missing out on the don't talk to strangers. Let's just use this as an opportunity to remind your kids, don't talk to strangers, especially if they're all like, I've got a kitty cat. I'd love to show you. They don't have a kitty cat. I mean, they might also. The sad news is maybe there is a woman out there who's just trying to adopt little kittens and now they can't. But other than that one person, just tell them not to talk to strangers. Just use this as an opportunity. Don't freak out. It's not happening all the time. We get these stories once in a blue moon, maybe what? Once every 3 or 4 months we have an incident like this. And the good news generally is that no one is harmed, no one is hurt, and they did the right thing. Just use it as an opportunity to talk to your kids.
Maybe just steer clear of cat people in general.
That's also a general truth. Like, yeah. Cat ladies are called that for a reason. It's because they're crazy cat ladies.
Yeah.
We've all seen The Simpsons. That woman exists. Let's stay away from them in general. Nothing good comes from a cat lady.
Just play it safe.
And cats, by the way, they're just the worst. Oh, no, they're just independent. No, they're not. They're moody and antisocial, and I hate them.
And just like you.
And I'm self-loathing. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRance, twitter.com/JasonRance. I don't know why, but when athletes act out in front of a large crowd and they act like belligerent little children, it's just interesting, right? It's just, and I'm not entirely sure I know why. It's like, okay, dude, you're acting like a crazy person. You're acting like a little baby. And yet I watch it with a sense of glee and urgency kind of mixed in together. Over the weekend, Australian tennis star Nick Kyrgios, he earned himself a rather hefty fine. He's a tennis guy who got fined $113,000. That is insane. He might get suspended because he had a meltdown, and I'm told it's his latest meltdown, so he's got a history of doing this kind of thing. He smashed two rackets. He called the umpire a blimping tool.
As one does.
Yeah, I mean, well, what if the ref got a wrong call? What are you supposed to do?
Check his eyesight?
Write a sternly worded letter? You know, you yell at them, you get in his face, and you maybe you threaten to hit him with the tennis racket. You don't actually, but you threaten to. Is that not? You can't do that? Like, you know, when did we get so weak?
When did we get so unoriginal? Like what 80s. He should have done is gone to the other side of the court with one of those eye tests you get at the doctor's office and start, you know,
like roll
covering
it out,
up
yeah.
the rose.
Well, here he is swearing at one of the refs and he gets a penalty. That have been a lot. And at one point, he ends up going back into, like, it's not the locker rooms, but he goes behind, I don't know what you call it. Like, it's a staging area of some kind before you come out during these events. And he ends up breaking two of his rackets, and it's completely delivered with play-by-play by the TV host.
He's taking two rackets off the court. How many is he coming back with?
But he's now just ignored Fergus Murphy. Yeah. None, I think, still.
I don't know why I find it so funny. Now, if you're wondering how he got to $113,000 in fine, because that's a crazy amount of money for tennis. I know there's probably a lot of money behind it. $113,000 is a lot. So he got a warning for abusing the ball, which I guess is a thing. Like if you hit the ball too hard, it gets mad and you get a warning.
Tennis ball advocate group hold of the sport.
I'm sure one exists. I have to assume. So he got a warning for that. Unsportsmanlike conduct. He got a point penalty and a $20,000 fine. So that was one of the cases in which he yelled at them and cursed at them. He left the court in the middle of the game, so they gave him a $3,000 fine for that. He had an audible obscenity, which we had to bleep out, so he got a $5,000 fine for that.
Gentleman's sport.
He then got an unsportsmanlike conduct for $5,000, and then another unsportsmanlike conduct for $20,000. Verbal abuse of a ref, $20,000, and then two more unsportsmanlike conduct fines, $20,000 apiece.
That's normally just a 15-yarder, but I guess in tennis it's different.
So, I mean, I'm assuming his anger was real. And I'm assuming the ref did everything right. But, you know, when you're passionate about something and you're not getting calls you think should go your way, you're gonna get mad a little bit. Okay. Is it ever – unless this guy's a multimillionaire, and maybe he is. I don't know the tennis world all that well, so I don't know who this guy is.
Fake fan.
I mean – is it worth $113,000 in fines? Just to cuss at the guy?
Maybe he didn't know the numbers. Maybe he thought it was closer to $40,000.
At that point, why not then just physically assault the guy? If you're already going to get hit with $113,000, how much more if you literally, you know, served a ball at the ref's chest?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I mean, I'm not suggesting he do it, but it can't be that much.
You kind of are suggesting he do it.
Okay, I mean, I'm just saying if all is equal... if you're going to get hit with $113,000 for multiple things, why not just do one thing that's meaningful and get the exact same fine? Do you think it's more? How much more could it be? It's the Jason Rand Show.